I turned off the alarm and let him in. His uniform was clean, his hair neatly combed, and he had splashed on too much aftershave. "You look a little better than when I saw you last," I commented as we headed toward the kitchen. "Looks like you cleaned up this joint," he said as we passed through the great room. "It's about time," I said. We walked into the kitchen, and he sat in his usual spot at the table by the window. He watched me with curious eyes as I got garlic and fast-acting yeast out of the refrigerator. "So what are we having? Can I smoke in here?" "No, you do. It's my house. How about if I open the window and blow it out?" "Depends on which way the wind is blowing." "We could get the ceiling fan going and see if that helps. I smell garlic. I thought we'd have pizza on the grill." I pushed aside cans and jars in the pantry, looking for crushed tomatoes and high-gluten flour. "The coins we found are English and German," he told me. "£2 and one Deutsche Mark. But this is where it starts getting real interesting. I hung around the port a little longer than you did, showering and whatever. And by the way, they sure as hell didn't waste any time hauling cartons out of that container and cleaning up. You watch. They'll sell that camera shit like nothing happened to it." I mixed half a package of yeast, warm water, and honey in a bowl and stirred. Then I reached for the flour. "I'm hungry as hell." His portable radio was upright on the table, blurting 10 codes and unit numbers. He yanked off his tie and unbuckled his duty belt with all its gear. I began kneading dough. "My lower back's killing me, Doc," he complained. "You got any idea what it's like wearing 20 pounds of shit around your waist?" His mood seemed considerably improved as he watched me work, sprinkling flour and shaping dough on the butcher block. "A loup-garou is a werewolf," I told him. "Huh? As in a wolf man." "Shit, I fucking hate those things." "I wasn't aware you'd ever met one." "You remember seeing Lon Chaney with all that fur growing on his face when the moon came out? Scared the hell out of me. Rocky used to watch shock theater, remember that?" Rocky was Marino's only child, a son I'd never met. I placed the dough in a bowl and covered it with a warm, wet cloth. "Do you ever hear from him?" I cautiously asked. "What about at Christmas? Will you see him then?" Marino nervously tapped an ash. "Do you even know where he lives?" I asked. "Yeah," he said. "Oh, hell yeah." "You act as if you don't like him at all," I said. "Maybe I don't." I scanned the wine rack for a nice bottle of red. Marino sucked smoke and exhaled loudly. He had nothing more to say about Rocky than he ever had. "One of these days you're going to talk to me about him," I said, as I poured crushed tomatoes in a pot. "You know as much about him as you need to," he said. "You love him, Marino." "I'm telling you, I don't love him. I wish he'd never been born. I wish I'd never met him." He stared out the window at my backyard, fading into night. This moment I didn't seem to know Marino at all. He was a stranger in my kitchen, this man in uniform who had a son I'd never met and knew nothing about. Marino wouldn't look me in the eye or thank me when I set a cup of coffee on his placemat. "How about peanuts or something?" I asked. "Nah," he said. "I've been thinking about going on a diet." "Thinking about it won't help much. It's been proven in studies." "You gonna wear garlic around your neck or something when you post our dead werewolf? You know you get bit by one, you turn into one, sort of like AIDS." "It's nothing like AIDS, and I wish you'd get off this AIDS thing." "You think he wrote that on the box himself?" "We can't assume that box and what was written on it are connected with him, Marino." "Have a nice trip, werewolf." "Yeah, you find that written on camera boxes all the time, especially when they're near dead bodies." "Let's get back to Bray and your new fashion statement," I said. "Start from the beginning. What did you do to make her such a fan?"
"It started about 2 weeks after she got here. Remember that autoerotic hanging?"
"Yes."
"She shows up and just walks right into the middle of everything and starts telling people what to do, like she's the detective. She starts looking through the porno magazines the guy was having fun with when he strung himself up in his leather mask. She starts asking his wife questions."
"Whoa," I said.
So I tell her to leave, that she's in the way and screwing up everything, and the next day she calls me into her office. I figure she's going to be tear-ass about what happened, but she doesn't say a word. Instead, she asks what I think of the detective division. He took a gulp of coffee and stirred in 2 more teaspoons of sugar. Thing is, I could tell that really wasn't what she was interested in, he went on. I knew she wanted something. She wasn't in charge of investigations, so why the hell was she asking me about the detective division? I poured myself a glass of wine. Then what did she want? I asked. She wanted to talk about you. She started asking me 1,000 questions about you. Said she knew we had been partners in crime, as she put it, for a long time. I checked the dough, then the sauce. She was asking me background stuff, what the cops thought of you. And what did you say? I told her you was a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief with an IQ bigger than my paycheck, that all the cops was in love with you, including the women. And let's see, what else? That was probably quite enough. She asked about Benton and what happened to him and how much it had affected your work. Anger heated me up. She started quizzing me about Lucy, about why she left the FBI and if the way she swings is the reason. This woman's fast sealing her fate with me, I warned. I told her Lucy left the Bureau because NASA asked her to become an astronaut, Marino kept going. But when she got into the space program, she decided she liked flying helicopters better and signed on as a pilot for ATF. Bray wanted me to tell her next time Lucy was in town, to arrange for the two of them to meet, because Bray might want to recruit her. I said that was sort of like asking Billie Jean King to be a ball girl. End of story? I didn't tell Bray shit, except I ain't your social secretary. 1 week later, my ass was back in uniform. I reached for my pack and felt like a junkie. We shared an ashtray, smoking in my house, silent and frustrated. I was trying not to feel hateful. I think she's jealous as hell of you, plain and simple, Doc, Marino finally said. She's the big shot, moving here from D.C., and all she hears about is the great Dr. Scarpetta. And I think she got a cheap thrill out of busting up the two of us. Gave the bitch a little power rush. He smashed the cigarette butt in the ashtray and ground it out. This is the first time you and me haven't worked together since you moved here, he said, as the doorbell rang for a second time this night. Who the hell's that? He said. You invite someone else and not tell me? I got up and looked into the video screen of the airphone on the kitchen wall. I stared, incredulous, at the images picked up by the front door camera. I'm dreaming, I said. 7. Lucy and Joe seemed apparitions, a physical presence that could not be flesh and blood. Both of them had been riding the streets of Miami barely 8 hours ago. Now they were in my arms. I don't know what to say, I said at least 5 times as they dropped duffel bags on the floor. What the hell's going on? Marino boomed, intercepting us in the great room. What do you think you're doing here? He demanded of Lucy, as if she had done something wrong. He had never been able to show affection in a normal way. The gruffer and more sarcastic he got, the happier he was to see my niece. They fire your ass down there already? He asked. What's this, trick or treat? Lucy said just as loudly, tugging a sleeve of his uniform shirt. You trying to make us finally believe you're a real cop? Marino, I said as we went into the kitchen. I don't think you've met Joe Sanders. Nope, he said. You've heard me talk about her. He gave Joe a blank look. She was an athletically built strawberry blonde with dark blue eyes, and I could tell he thought she was pretty. He knows exactly who you are, I said to Joe. He's not being rude. He's just being him. You work? Marino asked her, fishing his smoldering cigarette out of the ashtray and drawing one last puff. Only when I have no choice, Joe answered. Doing what? A little rappelling out of Black Hawks, drug busts, nothing special. Don't tell me you and Lucy are in the same field division down there in South America. She's DEA, Lucy told him. No shit, Marino said to Joe. You seem kind of puny for DEA. They're into quotas, Joe said. He opened the refrigerator and shoved things around until he found a red stripe beer. He twisted off the cap and started chugging. "Drinks are on the house," he called out. "Marino," I said, "what are you doing? You're on duty."
"Not anymore. Here, let me show you."
He set the bottle down hard on the table and dialed a number.
"Man, what you know?" he said into the phone. Yeah. "Listen, I ain't joking. I'm feeling like shit. You think you could cover for me tonight? I'll owe you."
Marino winked at us. He hung up, hit the speaker button on the phone, and dialed again. His call was answered on the first ring.
"Bray,"
the deputy chief of administration, Diane Bray, announced in my kitchen for all to hear.
"Deputy Chief Bray, it's Marino," he said in the voice of someone dying of a terrible scourge. "Really sorry to bug you at home."
He was answered with silence, having instantly and deliberately irritated his direct supervisor by referring to her as Deputy Chief. According to protocol, deputy chiefs were always addressed as Chief, while the chief himself was called Colonel. Calling her at home didn't win him any points either.
"What is it?"
Bray tersely asked.
"I feel like hell," Marino rasped. "Throwing up, fever, the whole nine yards. I gotta mark off sick and go to bed."
"You certainly weren't sick when I saw you a few hours ago."
"It happened real sudden. I sure hope I didn't catch some bacteria thing."
I quickly dashed out strep and clostridia on a notepad.
"You know, like strep or close to ride out there at the scene. One doctor I called warned me about that because of getting in such close proximity to that dead body and all."
"When does your shift end?" she interrupted him.
11.
Lucy, Joe, and I were red-faced, strangled by laughter we were fighting to hold in. "It's not likely I can find someone to be watch commander this late in the shift," Bray coldly replied.
"I already got hold of Lieutenant Mann in 3rd Precinct. He's nice enough to work the rest of tour for me,"
Marino let her know as his health failed precipitously. "You should have notified me earlier," Bray snapped.
"I kept hoping I could hang in there, Deputy Chief Bray."
"Go home. I want to see you in my office tomorrow."
"If I'm well enough, I'll drop by. I sure will, Deputy Chief Bray. You take care now. Sure hope you don't get whatever I got."
She hung up.
"What a sweetheart," Marino said as laughter leapt out.
"God, no wonder," Joe said when she could finally talk again. "I hear she's pretty much hated."
"How'd you hear that?" Marino frowned. "They talk about her in Miami?"
"I'm from here, an old mill right off 3 Chopped, not too far from the University of Richmond."
"Your dad teach there?" Marino asked.
"He's a Baptist minister."
"Oh, that must be fun."
"Yeah," Lucy chimed in. "Kind of bizarre to think she grew up around here and we never met until Miami. So what are you going to do about Bray?"
"Nothing," he said, draining the bottle of beer and going into the refrigerator for another one.
"Well, I sure as hell would do something," she said with huge confidence.
"You know, you think shit like that when you're young," he remarked. "Truth, justice, and the American way. Wait till you're my age. I'll never be your age."
"Lucy told me you're a detective," Joe started talking to Marino. "So why are you dressed like that?"
"Story time," Marino said. "You want to sit on my knee?"
"Let me guess. You pissed somebody off. Probably her."
"DEA teach you to make deductions like that, or are you just unusually smart for someone almost grown up?"
I sliced mushrooms, green peppers, and onions, and pinched off pieces of whole milk mozzarella while Lucy watched. Finally, she made me look her in the eye. "Right after you called this morning, Senator Lord did," she quietly told me. "It about shocked the entire field office, I might add."
"I bet it did."
"He told me to get on a plane immediately and come here."
"If only you minded me so well."
I was getting shaky inside again.
"That you needed me. I can't tell you how glad I am."
My voice caught as I tumbled back down into that frigid, dark space.
"Why didn't you tell me you needed me?"
"I didn't want to interfere. You're so involved down there. You didn't seem to want to talk.
All you had to say was, 'I need you.'
You were on a cell phone. I want to see the letter, she said. 8. I laid the knife on the cutting board and wiped my hands on a towel. I gave Lucy my eyes, and she saw the pain and fear in them. I want to read it alone with you, she said. I nodded, and we went back to my bedroom, and I got the letter out of the safe. We sat on the edge of my bed, and I noticed the Sig Sauer 232 pistol tucked in an Uncle Mike's sidekick ankle holster, peeking out of the cuff of her right pants leg. I couldn't help but smile as I thought about what Benton would say. Of course he would shake his head. Of course he would go into some phony baloney psychologizing that would leave us weak with laughter. But his humor was not without its point. I was aware of the more somber, foreboding side of what I was seeing right now. Lucy had always been an ardent worshipper of self-defense, but since Benton's murder she had become an extremist. "We're in the house," I said to her. "Why don't you give your ankle a rest?" "Only way to get used to wearing one of these things is to wear it a lot," she replied. "Especially stainless steel. It's so much heavier." "Then why wear stainless steel?" "I like it better. And down there with all that humidity and salt water." "Lucy, how much longer are you going to be doing this undercover thing?" I blurted out. "Aunt Kay." She met my eyes and put her hand on my arm. "Let's don't start that again. It's just... I know. It's just that you don't want one of these letters from me someday." Her hands were steady as she held the creamy sheet of paper. "Don't say that," I said with dread. "And I don't ever want one from you," she added. Benton's words were just as powerful and alive as they had been this morning when Senator Lord had brought them to me, and I heard Benton's voice again. I saw his face and the love in his eyes. Lucy read very slowly. When she was done, she could not speak for a moment. Then she said, "Don't you ever send me one of these. I don't ever want one of these." Her voice shook with pain and anger. "What's the point? So you can just upset someone all over again?" she said, getting up from the bed. "Lucy, you know his point." I wiped away tears and hugged her. "Deep down, you know." I carried the letter into the kitchen, and Marino and Joe read it, too. His reaction was to stare out the window at the night, his big hands listless in his lap. Hers was to get up and hover in the room, not sure where to go. "I really think I should go," she repeated herself, and we overruled. "He wanted the three of you here. I don't think I should be." "He would have wanted you here had he known you," I said. "Nobody leaves." Marino said it like a cop, drawing down on a room full of suspects. "We're all in this together. Goddamn." He got up from the table and rubbed his face in his hands. "I sort of wish he hadn't done that." He looked at me. "Would you do that to me, Doc? 'Cause if you got any ideas, I'm telling you right now to forget it. I don't want no words from the crypt after you're gone." "Let's put this pizza on," I said. We went out on the patio, and I worked the dough off a cookie sheet and placed it on the grill. I spread sauce and sprinkled the meats, vegetables, and cheese on top of it. Marino, Lucy, and Joe sat in iron rocking chairs because I would not let them help me. They tried to keep a conversation going, but no one had the heart for it. I drizzled olive oil over the pizza, careful not to make the coals flare up. "I don't think he brought you together just so you could be depressed," Joe finally said. "I'm not depressed," Marino said. "Yes, you are," Lucy countered. "About what, wise-ass? Everything. At least I'm not afraid to say I miss him." Lucy stared at him in disbelief. Their sparring had just drawn blood. "I can't believe you just said that," she told him. "Believe it? He's the only goddamn father you ever had, and I've never heard you say you miss him. Why? 'Cause you still think it's your fault, right? What's wrong with you?" "Well, guess what, Agent Lucy Farinelli?" Marino wouldn't stop. "It ain't your fault. It's fucking Carrie Grethen's fault. And no matter how many times you blow the bitch out of the sky, she'll never be dead enough for you. That's the way it works when you hate someone that bad." "And you don't hate her?" Lucy pushed back. "Hell," Marino swilled what was left of his beer. "I hate her worse than you do." I don't think it was Benton's plan for us to sit around here talking about how much we hate her or anybody, I said. Then how do you handle it, Dr. Scarpetta? Joe asked me. I wish you would call me Kay. I had told her this many times. I carry on. That's all I can do. The words sounded banal, even to me. Joe leaned into the light of the grill and looked at me as if I held the answers to every question she had ever asked in life. How do you go on? She asked. How do people go on? All these bad things we deal with every day, yet we're on the other side of it. It's not happening to us. After we shut the door, we don't have to keep looking at that stain on the floor where someone's wife was raped and stabbed to death, someone's husband's brains blown out. We lull ourselves into believing that we work cases and won't ever become cases, but you know better. She paused, still leaning into the light of the grill, and shadows from the fire played on a face that looked far too young and pure to belong to someone so full of such questions. How do you go on? She asked again. The human spirit is very resilient. I didn't know what else to say. Well, I'm afraid, Joe said. I think all the time about what I would do if something happened to Lucy. Nothing's going to happen to me, Lucy said. She got up and kissed Joe on the top of the head. She put her arms around her, and if this clear signal about the nature of their relationship was news to Marino, he didn't show it or seem to care. He had known Lucy since she was 10, and in some measure his influence on her had a lot to do with her going into law enforcement. He had taught her to shoot. He had let her drive the streets with him and even put her behind the wheel of one of his sacred trucks. When he first realized she didn't fall in love with men, he had been the consummate bigot, probably because he feared his influence had fallen short of what by his standard mattered most. He may even have wondered if he were somehow to blame. That was many years ago. I couldn't remember the last time he'd made a narrow-minded comment about her sexual orientation. But you work around death every day, Joe gently persisted. Aren't you reminded of what happened when you see it happen to someone else? I don't mean to... Well, I just don't want to be so afraid of death. I don't have a magic formula, I said, getting up. Except you learn not to think too much. The pizza was bubbling, and I worked a big spatula under it. That smells good, Marino said with a worried look. You think it's going to be enough? I made a second, then a third one, and I built a fire, and we sat before it with the lights out in the great room. Marino stuck with beer. Lucy, Joe, and I sipped a white burgundy that was crisp and clean. Maybe you should find somebody, Lucy said, the light and shadow of flames dancing on her face. Shit! Marino erupted. What is this all of a sudden? The dating game? Maybe if she wants to tell you personal stuff like that, she will. You shouldn't be asking. It ain't nice. Life isn't nice, Lucy said. And why should you care if she plays the dating game? Joe silently stared into the fire. I was getting fed up. I was beginning to wonder if I might have been better off staying alone tonight. Even Benton hadn't always been right. Remember when Doris left you? Lucy went on. What if people hadn't asked you about it? What if no one had cared what you did next, or if you were holding yourself together? You sure wouldn't have volunteered anything. Same goes for the idiots you've gone out with since. Every time one of them didn't work out, your friends had to jump in again and pry things out of you. Marino set the empty beer bottle on the hearth so hard I thought he might break the slate. Maybe you ought to think about growing up one of these days, he said. You're gonna wait until you're 30 before you stop being such a goddamn stuck-up brat? I'm getting another beer. He stalked out of the room. And let me tell you another thing, Marino threw back at her. Just because you fly helicopters and program computers and bodybuild and do all the other friggin' shit you do doesn't mean you're better than me. I've never said I was better than you, Lucy yelled after him. The hell you haven't, his voice carried from the kitchen. The difference between you and me is I do what I want in life, she called out. I don't accept limitations. You're so full of shit, Agent Asshole. Ah, now we're getting to the root of the matter, Lucy said as he reappeared, gulping beer. I'm a federal agent fighting big bad crime on big bad streets of the world. And you're in uniform riding around babysitting cops at all hours of the night. And you like guns because you wish you had a dick. So I can be what, a tripod? That's it, I exclaimed. Enough. The two of you ought to be ashamed of yourselves. Doing this of all times. My voice splintered, and tears stung my eyes. I was determined I wouldn't lose control again, and I was horrified that I no longer seemed able to help it. I looked away from them. Silence was heavy, the fire popping. Marino got up and opened the screen. He stirred embers with the poker and tossed on another log. I hate Christmas, Lucy said. 9. The next morning, Lucy and Joe had an early flight, and I could not bear the emptiness that would return with the shutting door. So I went out with them, briefcase in hand. I knew this day was going to be awful. I wish you didn't have to go, I said. But I guess Miami might not survive another day if you stayed here with me. Miami's probably not going to survive anyway, Lucy said. But that's what we get paid to do. Fight wars already lost. Sort of like Richmond when you think about it. God, I feel like shit. Both of them were in scruffy jeans and wrinkled shirts and had done nothing more than push gel through their hair. All of us were exhausted and hungover as we stood in my driveway. Carriage lanterns and streetlights had gone out as the sky turned dusky blue. We could not see each other well, just our shapes and shining eyes and foggy breath. It was cold. Frost on our cars looked like lace. Except the 165ers aren't going to survive, Lucy talked big, and I'm looking forward to that. The who? I asked. The gun-trafficking assholes we're after. Remember I told you we call them that because their ammo of choice is 165-grain Spear Gold Dot? Real high-end, hot stuff. That and all sorts of goodies. AR-15s, 223-caliber rifles, fully automatic Russian and Chinese shit. Coming in from maggot-promised land. Brazil, Venezuela, Colombia, Puerto Rico. Point is, some of this is being smuggled piecemeal by container ships that have no idea, she went on. Take the port in L.A. It unloads one cargo container every 1.5 minutes. No way anybody can search all that. Oh, that's right. My head was throbbing. We're real flattered to get the assignment, Joe added dryly. A couple of months ago, the body of some guy from Panama eventually linked to this cartel turned up in a South Florida canal. When they did the autopsy, they found his tongue in his stomach because his compatriots cut it off and made him eat it. I'm not sure I want to hear all this, I said, as the poison seeped into my mind again. I'm Terry, Lucy let me know. She's Brandy, she smiled at Joe. U of M girls who didn't quite graduate, but hey, who needs to? Because during our hard-working semesters of being dopers and getting laid, we learned some pretty good addresses for home invasions. We've developed a nice social relationship with a couple 165ers who do home invasions for guns, cash, drugs. We're setting up a guy on Fisher Island right now who's got enough guns to open his own damn gun store and enough coke to make it look like it's fucking snowing. I couldn't stand to hear her talk this way. Of course, the victim's undercover, too, Lucy went on, as big, dark crows began making rude noises and lights went on across the street. I noticed candles in windows and wreaths on doors. I had given virtually no thought to Christmas, and it would be here in less than 3 weeks. Lucy dug her wallet out of her back pocket and showed me her driver's license. The photograph was her, but nothing else was. Terry Jennifer Davis, she read to me. White female, 24 years old, 5'6", 121 pounds. It's really strange to be someone else. You ought to see my setup down there, Aunt Kay. I got this cool little house in South Beach and drive a Benz V12 sports car confiscated in a drug raid in Sao Paulo. Sort of silver, smoky. And you ought to see my Glock. A collector's model, 40 caliber, stainless steel slide, small. Talk about sweet. The poison was beginning to suffocate me. It cast a purple hue behind my eyes and made my hands and feet go numb. Lucy, how about we cut the show and tell, Joe said, sensing how all this was affecting me. It's like you're watching her do an autopsy. Maybe more than you want to know, right? She's let me watch, Lucy bragged on. I've seen maybe half a dozen. Joe was getting annoyed now. Police Academy demos, my niece shrugged. No axe murders. I was rocked by her insensitivity. It was as if she were talking about restaurants. Usually people who died of natural causes or suicide. Families donate the bodies to the anatomical division. Her words drifted around me like noxious gas. So it doesn't bother them if Uncle Tim or Cousin Beth is autopsied in front of a bunch of cops. Most of the families can't afford a burial anyway, and might in fact get paid something for body donations. Isn't that right, Aunt Kay? What in God's name is wrong with you? I lashed out at her. Bare trees were spidery against the overcast dawn, and two Cadillacs drove past. I felt people staring at us. I hope you don't plan on making this tough act a habit. I dashed my cold words in her face. Because it sounds stupid enough when ignorant, lobotomized people do it. And for the record, Lucy, I have let you watch 3 autopsies, and although Police Academy demos may not have been axe murders, the cases were human beings. Someone loved those 3 dead people you saw. Those 3 dead people had feelings. In love, happy, sad. They ate dinner, drove to work, went on vacations. I didn't mean, Lucy started to say. You can be sure when those 3 poor people were alive, they never thought they'd end up in a morgue with 20 rookies and some kid like you staring at their naked, opened-up bodies, I went on. Would you want them to hear what you just said? Lucy's eyes brightened with tears. She swallowed hard and looked away. I'm sorry, Aunt Kay, she quietly replied. Because it's always been my belief you ought to imagine the dead listening when you speak. Maybe they hear those sophomoric jokes and asides. For sure we hear them. What does it do to you when you hear yourself say them or hear someone else say them? Aunt Kay, I'll tell you what it does to you, I said with simmering fury. You end up just like this. I threw my hand out as if introducing the world to her as she looked on, stunned. You end up doing just what I'm doing right now, I said, standing on a driveway as the sun comes up, imagining someone you love in a fucking morgue. Imagine people making fun of him, joking, making comments about the size of his penis or how much he stinks. Maybe they banged him around a little too hard on the table. Maybe halfway into the goddamn job they threw a towel over his empty chest cavity and went to lunch. And maybe cops wandering in and out on other cases made comments about crispy critters or being burned by a snitch or FBI flambé. Lucy and Joe were staring at me in astonishment. Don't think I haven't heard it all, I said, unlocking my car door and yanking it open. A life passing through indifferent hands and cold air and water. Everything so cold, cold, cold. Even if he had died in bed, it's all so cold in the end. So don't you talk to me about autopsies. I slid behind the wheel. Don't you ever wave an attitude around me, Lucy. I couldn't seem to stop. My voice seemed to be coming from another room. It even occurred to me that I was losing my mind. Wasn't this what happened when people went insane? They stood outside themselves and watched themselves do things that really weren't them, like killing someone or walking off a window ledge. These things ring your head like a bell forever, I said, slamming their ugly clapper against the sides of your skull. It isn't true that words will never hurt you, because yours just hurt the hell out of me, I said to my niece. Go back to Miami. Lucy was paralyzed as I jammed my car into drive and sped off, a back tire bumping over the granite border. I caught her and Joe in my rearview mirror. They were saying something to each other and then getting inside their rental car. My hands shook so badly I couldn't light a cigarette until I was stopped in traffic. I didn't let Lucy and Joe catch up with me. I turned off on the 9th Street exit and imagined them flying by toward I-65, heading to the airport, back to their lives of undercover crime. God damn you, I muttered to my niece. My heart slammed against me as if trying to break free. God damn you, Lucy, I wept. 10. The new building where I worked was the eye of a fierce storm of development I never could have imagined when I moved into it in the 70s. I remembered feeling rather betrayed when I charged in from Miami,
just as Richmond's businesses decided to charge out to neighboring counties and malls. People stopped shopping and dining downtown, especially at night. The city's historic character turned victim to neglect and crime until the mid-90s, when Virginia Commonwealth University began to reclaim and revitalize what had been relegated to ruin. It seemed that handsome buildings began springing up almost overnight, all of similar brick and glass design. My office and morgue shared space with the labs and the recently established Virginia Institute of Forensic Science and Medicine, which was the first training academy of its type in the country, if not the world. I even had a choice parking space near the lobby door, where I sat in my car this moment gathering my belongings and my spinning thoughts. I had childishly turned off my car phone so Lucy couldn't get hold of me after I'd sped off. I turned it on now, hoping it would ring. I stared at it. The last time I had acted like this was after Benton and I had our worst fight, and I ordered him to leave my house and never come back. I unplugged my phones, only to plug them back in an hour later and panic when he didn't call. I looked at my watch. Lucy would be boarding her flight in less than an hour. I considered calling U.S. Air and having her paged. I was shocked and humiliated by the way I had behaved. I felt powerless because I couldn't apologize to someone named Terry Davis who didn't have an Aunt Kay or an accessible phone number and lived somewhere in South Beach. I looked pretty rough when I walked into the glass block and terrazzo lobby. Jake, who worked the security desk, noticed right away. "Good morning, Dr. Scarpetta," he said with his usual nervous eyes and hands. "You don't look like you're feeling so hot." "Good morning, Jake," I replied. "How are you?"
Same-o, except the weather's supposed to start turning real fast and get nasty, and I could do without that."
He was clicking a pen open and shut. "Can't seem to get rid of this pain in my back, Dr. Scarpetta. It's right between my shoulder blades." He rolled his shoulders and neck. "Sort of pinches like something's caught back there. Happened after I was lifting weights the other day. What do you think I should do? Or do I need to write you?" I thought he was trying to be funny, but he wasn't smiling. "Moist heat. Lay off the weights for a while," I said.
"Hey, thanks. How much you charge?"
"You can't afford me, Jake." He grinned. I swiped my computer card over the electronic lock on the door outside my office door, and the lock clicked free. I could hear my clerks, Cleta and Polly, talking and typing. The phones were already ringing, and it wasn't even 7:30 yet.
"It's really, really bad.
You think people from other countries smell different when they decompose?
Come on, Polly. How stupid is that?"
They were tucked inside their gray cubicles, sifting through autopsy photographs and entering data into computers, cursors jumping field to field.
"Better get some coffee while you can,"
Cleta greeted me with a judgmental look on her face.
"If that ain't the truth," Polly smacked the return key.
"I heard," I said.
"Well, I'm keeping my mouth shut," said Polly, who couldn't if she tried.
Cleta made a zipping motion across her lips without missing a keystroke.
"Where is everybody?"
"In the morgue," Cleta told me. "We've got 8 cases today."
"You've lost a lot of weight, Cleta," I said, collecting death certificates from my inner office mailbox.
12.5 pounds, she exclaimed, as she dealt gory photographs like playing cards,
arranging them by case numbers.
"Thank you for noticing. I'm glad somebody round here does."
"Damn," I said, glancing at the death certificate on top of my stack.
"You think we might ever convince Dr. Carmichael that cardiac arrest is not a cause of death? Everyone's heart stops when he dies. The question is, why did it stop? Well, that one gets amended."
I flipped through more certificates as I followed the long teal and plum carpeted hallway to my corner office. Rose worked in an open space with plenty of windows, and it wasn't possible to reach my door without entering her airspace. She was standing before an open filing cabinet drawer, fingers impatiently fluttering through labeled tabs.
"How are you?" she asked around a pen clamped in her mouth.
"Marino's looking for you."
"Rose, we need to get Dr. Carmichael on the line."
"Again?"
"Afraid so. He needs to retire."
My secretary had been saying this for years. She pushed the drawer shut and pulled open another one.
Why is Marino looking for me? Did he call me from home? She took the pen out of her mouth. He's here, or was. Dr. Scarpetta, do you remember that letter you got last month from that hateful woman? Which hateful woman? I asked, looking up and down the hallway for Marino and seeing no sign of him. The one in prison for murdering her husband right after she took out $1 million life insurance policy on him? Oh, that one, I said. I slipped off my suit jacket as I walked into my office and set my briefcase on the floor. Why is Marino looking for me? I asked again. Rose didn't answer. I had noticed she was getting hard of hearing, and every reminder of her encroaching frailties frightened me. I put the death certificates on top of a stack of about 100 others I hadn't gotten around to reviewing yet, and draped my suit jacket over my chair. Point is, Rose loudly said, she's since sent you another letter, this time accusing you of racketeering. I retrieved my lab coat from the back of the door. She claims you conspired with the insurance company and changed her husband's manner of death from accident to homicide so they wouldn't have to pay out the money. And for this, you got quite a large kickback, which is, according to her, how you can afford your Mercedes and expensive suits. I threw my lab coat over my shoulders and pushed my arms through the sleeves. You know, I can't keep up with the crazies anymore, Dr. Scarpetta. Some of them really frighten me, and I think the Internet is making all of it worse. Rose peeked around the doorway. You aren't listening to a word I'm saying, she said. I get suits on sale, I replied, and you blame everything on the Internet. I probably wouldn't bother shopping for clothes at all if Rose didn't force me out the door every now and then when stores were clearing out last season's styles. I hated shopping, unless it was for good wine or food. I hated crowds. I hated malls. Rose hated the Internet and believed the world would end one day because of it. I'd had to force her to use email. If Lucy calls, will you make sure I get it no matter where I am? I said as Marino walked into Rose's office. And try her field office, too. You can patch her through. The thought of Lucy knotted my stomach. I'd lost my temper and hurled words at her I didn't mean. Rose glanced at me. Somehow she knew. Captain, she said to Marino, you look mighty spiffy this morning. Marino grunted. Glass rattled as he opened a jar of lemon drops on her desk and helped himself. What do you want me to do with this crazy lady's letter? Rose peered through the open doorway at me, reading glasses perched on her nose as she dug through another drawer. I think it's time we forward the lady's file, if you ever find it, to the AG's office, I said, in case she sues, which will probably be next. Good morning, Marino. You still talking about that nutcake I locked up? He asked, sucking candy.